today's Underreported, we turn to Gabon, a tiny country in equatorial Africa near the Democratic Republic of Congo that has timber, manganese, and oil. Elections are slated there for this weekend for the successor to Omar Bongo, who served as president of the country for four decades and died just a couple of months ago. How does a country so unfamiliar with democracy plunge headfirst into the democratic process? Well, consider that the leading candidate to succeed Omar Bongo is Ali Bongo, son of the former leader. We're joined now by Dr. Douglas Yates. He's an assistant professor of political science at American University of Paris and a Gabon expert. Welcome to the show, Professor Yates.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a thrill to be talking to New York.
Yes. Let's talk about Omar Bongo. After Fidel Castro stepped down in Cuba, he held the distinction of being the longest serving head of state in the world. It only lasted a few months and then he died. Did he rule with an iron fist, or were there some pluses and minuses to the stability he brought to the country?
Well, Omar Bongo was more famous for spending his country's abundant oil revenues, distributing them in a way that he could build alliances through his single-party system. So between the carrot and the stick, Omar Bongo was more the carrot.
But he took from the oil revenue and kept a lot for himself?
Well, he planted a lot of carrots in France. He has over 26 properties here, including an $18 million apartment he bought just last year.
He didn't really get to use them.
Well, the family's quite large because Omar Bongo had several wives, and many of the ministers and powerful people in the country are his children from different families. And when you add the grandchildren and the rest, it's quite a large clan.
Was he popular in Gabon?
Well, his legitimacy, rather than his popularity, was based on economic performance. So there were efforts in the 1990s with popular uprisings to throw him out of power. The French intervened militarily and stopped that. And so for the whole period of the 90s and the early 2000s, the opposition slowly either was co-opted by Bongo, where leading opposition leaders actually joined the presidential coalition, or it was marginalized. In the last presidential elections, Omar Bongo took 79%. The runner-up, Pierre Mambundu, who's running again this weekend, only got 13%.
He was propped up by France, and yet when Nicolas Sarkozy was among the 40 heads of state to attend his funeral, Sarkozy was booed. Why?
Well, this was interesting. There had been an investigation into Bongo's possessions in France, and this investigation was moving forward in a civil action, and it caused a big diplomatic row. The people who were at the funeral were Bongo's supporters. The funeral was held in Bongo's hometown. Those people were booing Sarkozy because he wasn't stopping the investigation into corruption.
And yet, without Sarkozy and without France, and maybe you could talk about if the rest of the West countenanced Bongo's kleptocracy slash stay hold on power, without them, where would Bongo have been?
Well, he was completely propped up by foreign oil revenues and French military intervention. There's no question that Omar Bongo was an instrument of Franco-American policy in Africa during the whole Cold War. The question is, after him, will it be the deluge?
And, well, will it be Ali Bongo? Can he be considered the front runner to take his father's title?
Oh, yeah. Ali Bongo has the endorsement of the PDG. That's the ruling party in Gabon. It's won every election since 1968. It controls both houses of the legislature. It always has the president and the prime minister and most of the ministries, the local governments. The PDG is the only party with representation through the whole country. All the opposition parties, and there are 23 candidates in total, are fragmented territorially or ethnically. So only the PDG can win. Ali Bongo's the candidate of the PDG.
Is this a situation where if for some reason on the day of the election, the Gabonese woke up and decided to vote them out of office, their vote would actually be counted? Do we fear that the election and not just the process itself might be rigged?
Well, there have been accusations that up to 300,000 additional electoral cards have been printed. This would correspond to almost exactly the number with which the population of Gabon has been inflated. If you look up Gabon in the CIA fact book or anywhere else, they're going to say it's 1.5 million.
Yeah.
Some will say 1.3 million. Gabon probably has a million people. And so they've created 300,000 fictive Gabonese. This was to get debt relief, to sort of lower their per capita income figures. They can create 300,000 electoral cards. And the PDG is, as I said, well organized.
Yeah, it's like what every U.S. Congressman does to try to overrepresent his district. But I wasn't aware that countries did it. It kind of makes sense.
So, but this has been a strange season because it started with Omar Bongo dying in Barcelona and his death being officially denied. And then after everyone in the world said they thought Françafrique was dead, you see at his funeral almost everyone showed up, even Obama sent his deepest sentiments. There's really a question about two standards. One, I think we want change in Africa. The other, we want stability.
Well, he did bring stability. Was that through force of will? Was that just because he inherited a good situation? Was Omar Bongo actually in ways a skilled leader?
Oh, he was. He was a self-made man. He was the ninth child who came from an area that wasn't even part of Gabon, deep in the forest. And he rose up through the French army. And at decolonization, he found himself working with a network of spies, mercenaries, and people run out of Charles de Gaulle's presidential palace. And they quickly installed him in power and kept him there. And through negotiating the 80 ethnic groups which comprise Gabon and always giving the prime ministership to the largest ethnic group, the Fong, of which he's not a member, he managed to create a Noah's Ark in the PDG where everyone had at least one or two members.
Mm. Describe the voting process. How's an election in Gabon work?
Well, they just changed both the constitution, which allowed Omar Bongo and any president to serve without term limits, and also they changed the way the president's elected. In the past, they elected the president the way they do it in France, a two-round ballot. Mm-hmm. In the first round, you have lots of candidates. Everybody votes for who they like. In the second round, you've got the two runner-ups, and this allows the opposition to coalesce around a single opposition candidate. What they did was they changed the rules, and in 2003, Omar Bongo changed it to a first-past-the-post plurality system.
Which
Whoever gets the most votes, right, that's what we use, like in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be real exact, Omar Bongo got 275,000 votes, and that's what he won with last time. Ali Bongo surely will get that.
Okay, so then this is the strong prediction is that Ali
Absolutely.
Bongo is all but certain to become the next leader.
Yes.
How many
yes.
are running against him?
Well, there's 23 candidates in total, and that actually helps because it's a first past the post. Whoever has the most votes wins. So the more the opposition is splintered, the larger his victory becomes.
Other than the fact that it's always a good thing to break one family's clutches on power, would anything argue for one of these opposition leaders maybe being more in the interests of Gabon? Gabon?
Oh, yes. Well, Pierre Mambundu has been a very strong opposition leader to the corruption of the regime, but he's very concentrated among the Punu Ishira people of the south. Father Père Mba Abesol from the Rassemblement de Boucheron has been a longtime opponent to Bongo. During the last years, he turned to the Bongo camp, but he has no loyalty towards Ali Bongo. He represents the Fong, the largest ethnic group. He's been mayor of Libreville. He's another potential.
One opposition candidate has said that Gabon's men should go on a sex strike if a man wins the election, if a woman wins the election. Another candidate is himself on a hunger strike. What's going on there?
Well, Gabon happens to be right now having its first woman president, Rose Rongambe, who's the interim president of Gabon. Gabon's fairly traditional when it comes to gender. It doesn't practice genital mutilation or those kinds of monstrosities, but the idea of a woman being in charge is so unacceptable that Pascaline Bongo, who is Ali Bongo's older half-sister, from Omar Bongo's first marriage, Pascaline Bongo, who's worked in the presidency for years, could not present herself as candidate for the PDG. It was her younger half-brother, Ali Bongo, who is the candidate for succession.
The female president now has been mostly stripped of her powers. She
No, she's serving a pro tem function. Okay. She emerged from the parliament, and it's a pro tem position. And apparently, she's done quite well at it. Everyone knows that she's not going to remain president, so it's been non-menacing, and it set a precedent. Gabon's first woman president.
Mm. And is there any potential, because there have been reports around Gabon, the slogan "Anything except Ali" is being used in the streets. So is there potential, when Ali Bongo wins, as you say he will, a potential for unrest?
Well, there already have been manifestations, protests, on the 7th of August. The problem with protests is that they only have about a month of food. So you'll find that most of these protests in the cities peter out because there's not enough supplies to keep them going. So that doesn't tend to ever overturn the regime.
Wow. And the campaign itself is really short. It's a two-week campaign?
Yes. Well, this is part of the succession strategy. The problem for Omar Bongo was he didn't inherit a kingdom of Gabon, and he wants to transmit it to his son. And he obviously spent the last 10 years paying off Gabon's debt and preparing Ali Bongo with ministerial posts and all but designating him as the legitimate successor. And this included changing the electoral rules, creating an election Ali Bongo can quickly win in a first round by simply getting more votes than his opponents, as well as probably also paying a few of the former prime ministers to splinter off, create independent candidacies as a distraction.
Reuters, here's a Reuters report. It says that an Ali Bongo victory would be, quote, welcomed by markets as a sign that investor-friendly policies will continue. What kind of policies are those?
Well, there's three big areas in Gabon. Forestry, 80% of the country is still covered by rainforest, and forestry is the biggest sector in terms of employment. The wood is very good quality. The Chinese are as interested in as the Europeans and the Americans. The second is oil. Gabon's reserves have been major. It's the fifth largest producer in sub-Saharan Africa. But the investments there have been protected militarily in 1991. The third is manganese. Gabon is the second largest producer of manganese in the world. Manganese is an essential alloy in steel. The Chinese are interested in that. In particular, the Chinese have just invested several billion dollars to extract the world's largest untapped iron ore reserve in the Belinga region of Gabon. And so these are the investments. They're long-term investments. They're mining investments. The powers that have made those investments want stability.
It sounds like, given those three natural resources, by nothing that Bongo himself did, just what he inherited, but it seems like the country may be diversified enough so that if oil drops, they still have the engine of the Chinese economy to fall back on.
Well, precisely. They're not so much diversifying out of minerals, but just shifting their dependency gradually from oil, which is declining, to manganese, iron. They also, by the way, were one of the supplies of uranium for France, and they still have uranium, and they've got gold. But this kind of rent-driven economy mm-hmm. produces a certain kind of government, and you can see by the support for the stability of the regime over its poverty alleviation and its social policy, you can see that that model of development where you depend on rents from your mines does not promote social development, does not eradicate poverty.
But it does seem that there are many other countries in that position, and the governments of other sub-Saharan African countries have been much more repressive, though we haven't explicitly talked about Bongo's human rights record and what human rights are like in the Gabon. How does it compare to its neighboring countries in sub-Saharan Africa?
Right. Bongo was Mr. Kid Gloves. When it did come to make decisive moves, he acted like Machiavelli recommended, and he would do all of his violence at once and quickly. And then he would spend the rest of his time distributing favors, so over time people perceived him as a good man. But overall, he was able to use a very limited amount of violence towards the end, because as the generations passed, he was able to target the youngest, the brightest. It's a very small population, 1 million people. And he was able to channel them into activities that said basically were pro-regime. And so those opposition leaders who were sort of sociologically identifiable were a different problem for him. And usually he was able to make the opposition leaders dependent on him. If they got a municipal government, he would be the one that would allow them to take out the trash. That's how he broke the Fong in the north.
The Committee to Protect Journalists has charged that reporters in Gabon have been routinely repressed. What's the freedom of the press situation in Gabon?
Freedom of the press has actually gone down. For example, Freedom House in its index has even managed to record a decline in the state. The problem for press now is that the investigation into President Bongo's personal and family fortune is so scandalous and so politically hot that he cannot permit freedom of the press. So there is a press that exists in Gabon. There's no daily newspaper anymore, but the audiovisual ends up being what matters the most, and the government tries to maintain as much as it can a control over the dissemination of information.
Have you been there?
Oh, of course, but I don't go anymore.
Why not?
Oh, well, I've published 3 books on Gabon that, speak kind of frankly about the situation there. I published The Rentier State in Gabon, most recently The Historical Dictionary of Gabon, and The French Oil Industry and the Corps des Mines in Africa. And these books really are exposés as well as scientific research.
How does one choose that particular country to have as an area of expertise?
Well, one aspect with Gabon, because there's a lot of very beautiful things with the country. The regime is absolutely, cruddy, but the country is amazing. It's got the world's largest population of gorillas, for example. 80% of it's still tropical rainforest. There are legends that exist there of things which, we still don't know. There's quite a shroud of mystery that hangs over a great deal of it, as well as, of course, the fact that it produced oil, and I work on oil in Africa.
Right. I've been speaking with Doug Yates, a Gabon expert, and we found out why he's a Gabon expert, about what's going on in that small African country that will have elections on Sunday. Doug Yates, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much.